Coming up on this episode of Inside Pop,
we're speaking with a music journalist the day after he covered the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame ceremony. We'll get the inside scoop on what went down at the big show.
Plus, the big sell this week is totally whack.
Wickety whack. It's all ahead right now on Inside Pop. What is going on? I'm Sean David Johnson.
And I'm Amita Patel, and this is Inside Pop, your deep dive inside the world of pop culture.
We are going to get right to our interview with Brian Ives, who's going to tell us everything that went down at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction ceremony. But first, a quick request. If you are listening to this show on Apple Podcasts, please head over there and give us a rating and review. Those comments and all of those stars help other listeners find our show.
All right, let's get to it. This past Friday, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inducted its 2019 honorees, and we are excited to have music journalist Brian Ives here with us to tell us everything that happened during the ceremony. Brian Ives is actually our former colleague from VH1, and he's gone on to work as an editor and writer and pundit for SiriusXM, CBS, and Loudwire. He's currently the managing editor of Beasley Media's radio station websites. Welcome, Brian.
Hey!
Brian, so amazing to have you on the podcast, long overdue. As we were talking about offline, I miss our music conversations.
Definitely.
We're excited to have you because you were there last night, and we have like this firsthand inside the room discussion about what happened.
And I unabashedly love it. Like, I know there are people who dislike it, including Tom York, who didn't show up last night. And even like Trent Reznor, if I may, made a really funny joke. He said, you know, it's true that I may have said some things about certain award shows and that they don't matter. And he's like, you know, in particular here, he said, I used to just think if X, Y, and Z is in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and The Cure isn't, how could I take them seriously? And then he said, I've never been so happy to eat my words. And it was just a great moment.
That's a great moment. That's a great moment. So how many times have you covered the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame ceremony?
Gosh, probably between 10 and 15. I've been to a lot.
You have all of these legendary artists who are inductees, but then all these legendary artists who get to introduce them and perform sometimes. Like, what is the vibe in that room?
Well, I mean, it used to be, and Sean, I think you've been there too, when it was at the Waldorf Astoria.
Yeah, I've been there twice, once for U2, and then once, of course, when REM was inducted.
So the vibe used to be different. It used to be at the Waldorf Astoria. It was very much, you know, just artists and sort of industry people. And a couple of years ago, they made the decision to open this up to like the general public. And it's been held at Public Hall in Cleveland, the Barclays Center in Brooklyn, and the Staples Center in Los Angeles. And the vibe has definitely changed over the years. And it's interesting. Every different ceremony has a different sort of feel because people don't just go because they want to go to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction ceremony. They're going because they want to see Janet. They want to see The Cure. They want to see Stevie Nicks. Or even they heard Harry Styles is going to be there and he might talk and he might sing a song. So there, you know, in the example of last night, like it was known Harry Styles was going to be there. There was definitely a high-pitched screeching contingent, which you don't always get at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. But, you know, when they, you know, Stevie Nicks opened the show with a performance before any of the speeches. So it's just like, welcome to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And then you just heard, you know, and they went right into Stand Back. And that's how it kicked off. Although by her third song, Harry Styles walks on stage with a guitar and he sang Tom Petty's part of Stop Dragging My Heart Around. And from there, you could hear like all the kids like, you know, and then, you know, after the performance was all over, Harry Styles came back out to make his speech, which was beautiful and heartfelt. But like kind of almost everything he said, as you could imagine, elicited like very enthused responses from like only very young women.
So that being said, would you like it back at the Waldorf Astoria?
No, I'm more proletariat, I think. Like, I think it's cool for it to be for the people. Like, you know, if you really love Roxy Music, for instance, although that's not really very mainstream of a band, you know, they're probably not going to play again. So I think it's cool that you get the chance to see Brian Ferry and the other two guys from Roxy play. Like, I like the idea that it's open to the public. I mean, sometimes in some years it could be annoying. Like, there was a couple of years ago where Rush, Public Enemy, and Heart were inducted. And it was a really great year, but like clearly Rush pulled the crowd. It was like a Rush concert. And Harry Belafonte was, Harry Belafonte and Spike Lee both did speeches about Public Enemy. And Harry Belafonte went on for a really long time. And people, I felt, were being like a little disrespectful about that. Like, I don't care if you're a Rush fan. I'm a Rush fan. Like, that's Harry Belafonte. Shut up.
Right.
And there is, in the same night, I remember Quincy Jones got in. And, you know, he's an older guy and, like, rambled a little bit. But, like, shut up. Like, just, you know. So this year, there was none of that. Like, everybody seemed very, you know, you could see a Cure fan coming from a mile away.
Right.
You didn't get the sense that they were starting to lose their patience during Def Leppard or during Stevie Nicks or something that you would think that they were too cool. That was quotes for those of you at home. Too cool to like really be into. Everyone sort of seemed into everything. And like you kind of saw Cure people even getting up and dancing during like Pour Some Sugar on Me. Kind of like everybody liked everything, it felt like.
That's awesome. Great. I mean, it seems like, you know, in some ways, like what you're describing sounds like a close to a musical utopia, right? Like fans of different genres enjoying, you know, different music. But you always hear about this no-win situation that the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame has, right? Every year, people are upset because X, Y, or Z didn't get inducted. So right. I'd love your take, Brian, like as a music fan, but also as a voter. What's your take on the process of inducting musicians and those who get left out, those who
it's probably right that everybody's sort of feels like left out or whatever, because then if they inducted everyone that everyone wanted, this ceremony would be too long and then people would complain about that. So the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame really can't win. Like last night's ceremony went from 7:15 till after midnight.
Wow.
And there was like no intermission or anything like that, you know. So people complain about the length of it. People complain about who was left out. Like, you know, when I look over the whole list, I mean, I think there's been probably like 100, you know, 300 or 400 inductees over the years. I don't look at a lot of them and say, how did that person or how did that band get in? Like, even if I'm not a fan, they all kind of deserve it. Like, I never really listened to Roxy music much before they were on the ballot. And then I started listening to them really intensely. And, you know, I might not have voted for them, but I have to recognize their incredible impact. So I feel like everybody's always going to feel like, oh, but what about, you know, I mean, Duran Duran were there last night to present Roxy, but Duran Duran have been eligible for years. Like, why isn't Duran Duran in? I feel like there's a great argument that they should be.
Yeah.
You know, Trent Reznor was there for The Cure, and Nine Inch Nails has been eligible for quite a few years as well. And I would argue in the past 25 or 30 years, there have not been many bands that have been more game changing than Nine Inch Nails has, you know, with bringing electronics into rock music and making it seem cool and doing all the innovative things that he did. Like, you know, you could definitely argue, and I would, that Nine Inch Nails should be in. Susanna Hoffs was there. She presented The Zombies. And the Bangles were a huge band in the 80s. Like,
yeah.
Great. And the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame should probably have more women on their nominating committee and more women voters. And maybe the Bangles just happen to have more of an impact on women than men. But like, you could certainly argue that the Bangles or the Go-Go's should be in.
Yeah.
So I feel like most genres are pretty well represented, like some bands from each genre is. I felt like for me, The Cure getting in last night was a big deal. And Sean, you'll probably feel me on this. It, you know, like they kind of go from like the CBGBs, Blondie, Talking Heads, Ramones, Flash, and then they leap all the way to like the Beastie Boys, Red Hot Chili Peppers, Nirvana, and there's almost nothing in the middle other than R.E.M. and U2, but like R.E.M. and U2 are just so big, they kind of transcend it.
Right.
You know, it's saying, oh, I love heavy metal, I love Metallica, who else do you love? No, you know, like Metallica have transcended metal in the way that U2 and R.E.M. have transcended WLIR's sort of genre of
indie rock.
So for me, The Cure getting in was a really big deal because I feel like that genre, which would also include, you know, New Order and The Smiths and Depeche Mode and from the American bands, you know, like The Replacements and Husker Du, like none of those bands have been in. So I feel like that was a genre that has been ignored, and I'm glad that now it's not. you know, and similarly, metalheads are always, always, always complaining. And, you know, as a guy who is the editor-in-chief of Loudwire, like the biggest heavy metal, you know, website, I would argue that a lot of those bands should, you know, Judas Priest, Motorhead, Iron Maiden, whatever, they should be in too. But like I say, everyone's always going to be like, oh, you don't have enough of my bands, you know, like that's part of the thing, you know?
So Brian, when you're voting, and I think it's so cool that you're a voter for this.
I know.
What's your criteria? Because sometimes I'll question, you know, oh yeah, I want to chant that Janet should have been inducted, 10 years ago when she was first eligible. But I also say, I don't think of Janet Jackson when I think of rock and roll, you know? So I'd love to hear you as a voter, when you are deciding whom you vote for, you know, how much of it is based on popularity and sales? How much of it is based on, I think, like inherent musical talent, influence? What's your criteria?
Well, so this was my first year voting, but I was very influenced by, I don't know if you ever saw the speech, but Tom Morello years ago from Rage Against the Machine did the speech for Kiss. And if you've ever seen Tom Morello speak about like workers' rights or equality or something like that, he gets very fired up.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. You would actually have thought that Kiss getting into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is as important as people getting a living wage. Now, it's on YouTube. You should watch it immediately if you haven't seen it. But one of the things that he said is his criteria is influence, impact, and awesomeness. And, you know, influence is sort of, you know, you could trace that. If a bit, you know, like I think you would agree with me too, Sean, that, you know, the Velvet Underground didn't sell a lot of records, but they influenced all the bands that we love. And I'm only talking to Sean, Amita, because we are older than you. So you don't have as many of the references. But like U2 and REM would not have existed without the Velvet Underground.
Agreed.
So a band like that, like sales doesn't matter. I would say the same is true for Roxy Music. You know, impact to me is part of the sales. Like when somebody is just so huge, you know, there's a precedent for Janet Jackson. Michael Jackson has been inducted. Madonna has been inducted. Like both of those artists were not getting played on rock music on rock radio at any point in their careers. But I feel like the impact is sort of hard to deny. Mm-hmm. But as opposed to like I would have a problem with Mariah Carey getting in or Whitney Houston getting in. I had a problem with like Neil Diamond getting in, you know, like if Barry Manilow got in. But there's something about Michael and Janet and Madonna that they have this sort of edge, they have this sort of creativity. And I kind of, you know, I binge listened through the Janet catalog, starting with like her first two albums.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
They're cute.
Yeah,
you know,
they're cute.
Like a teenager.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, but then when you get to Control, it's like those albums were actually pretty radical, you know, and then you, even more so on Rhythm Nation. Like, she's talking about racial inequality and stuff like that. Like, I don't know that she gets credit for that. I don't think any pop stars of that time did that. And it's kind of weird. I mean, I was really thinking of Janet's influence. Today, pop music has these artists that sort of, you could never have predicted this. It's pop artists that don't need radio. They could do, you know, like Beyonce does not need the radio to be huge. Mm-hmm. Drake doesn't. The Weeknd doesn't, and there's new artists coming out all the time on SoundCloud, and it's like if radio doesn't play them, even if it's top 40 radio, which ostensibly is for kids, like they don't need it. Mm-hmm. They just don't need it. But I feel like Janet was one of the first quote unquote pop artists who was really doing weird, strange, and radical things that might not be palatable to the radio. And just going through like her records, I was like, this is a real. She really does deserve it. I kind of regret not having voted for her. But I'm not I think the term is rockist. Okay. R-O-C-K-I-S-T. Mm-hmm. Like okay. I, to quote the great lady, I love rock and roll, but my umbrella is kind of wide. Like I don't think rock and roll necessarily needs to be guitar, bass, drums, and someone singing. You know, I think it could take many different forms. And I also just, based on my personal politics, don't think it should be a party for like all white, straight, old dudes, you know, being inclusive is important. Funny enough, last year they started inducting songs into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Oh, interesting.
Generally by artists that are not big enough to get in, but like the song made a big impact. And so one of the songs that I got in last night was Tequila by The Champs. And of course, Van Zant does this segment where he introduces all these like records. And he said, you know, the Champs, like Richie Valens, were two of the artists that represented the Latino community's immense contribution to rock and roll. And I was like, wow, that's a really great way to, you know, I hadn't really thought of it that way.
Yeah.
But I think that that's great. And to me, like, I love that. Like, I don't want to see everybody who sold millions of records get in, because selling millions of records is its own award and reward. Like, I don't think you should get in just because you're popular, but I also don't think you shouldn't get in just because you're popular. And so, you know, if anybody has a problem with Janet, I think they should listen to Nasty and Control and Black Cat. And she's got like plenty of, you know, I was discovering songs going through her albums that I'd never even heard before. I was, you know, I was really knocked out. Like, I actually would say she's underrated.
Wow.
Which is a weird thing to say about somebody who's like, she's so sold big. Over 100 million records, but I kind of feel like she doesn't even still get her due. I mean, maybe this helps to change the way people see her.
I hope so.
That's great. I think that, you know, I mean, one of the things that I always did love about our conversations back in the day when we were at VH1 was that, you know, you were someone who could be equally passionate about The Cure. But then, you know, open yourself up and appreciate someone like Janet Jackson or Madonna. And I think, you know, I would imagine, like, sometimes I think that's a rare thing, but I hope that it's becoming a more common thing. Like, I hope that, you know, for millennials, for example, you know, who grew up on Kanye and, you know, The Strokes or, you know, whoever, like, I feel like that's probably, hopefully, a more normal thing for them.
Yeah, I mean, I would actually discourage anyone from ever listening to The Strokes personally.
I don't know why, like, The Strokes popped into my head.
Yeah, I mean, no, I get what you're saying. Like, I get what you're saying. But to me, like, bands like that are why people don't like rock, because you're seeing like these guys who are so boring and they seem so bored. And like, if that's how you think of rock, then yeah, I would be into Kanye West instead of that too. You know?
Right.
Even country artists seem to be having more fun than like a lot of the rock bands that you see, which is... Yeah. We in the world of rock are sort of struggling with now. That's a totally different episode.
Yeah. We'll have you back on for that one.
We will discuss that in a future episode. So I want to dive further into some of the honorees. Radiohead, who we didn't mention that much yet, but only two of the members showed up, and David Byrne from the Talking Heads, aka one of Sean's favorite bands, inducted them.
Yeah, I mean, I think people would have loved to have seen Radiohead there and perform. David Byrne was really, really, you know, you could see how impressed he was. Obviously, he mentioned that Radiohead named themselves after a Talking Heads song. And he said that, you know, he had been always impressed with the band through their early albums. But this one got me. He's like, I became a fan with Kid A. And I was like, really? The Bends wasn't good enough for you?
Wow.
You know, like... Okay, Computer, that wasn't good enough for you? Like, it was Kid A. But, like, okay, you know, whatever. David Byrne's a weird guy. Kid A is still a great album. And, you know, he talked about not only them being musically innovative, but he mentioned that Kid A was released as an app. And this was in the early 2000s. Like, he talked a lot about the way they were ahead of their time, just in the way they presented their music, not just their music. And even, you know, he mentioned In Rainbows, which they famously, you know, they released it. I don't know if you guys remember this, but they released it sort of for free, and you could kind of pay what you wanted.
Yep.
You could have it. You could just have it for free. You could pay $15, which was the recommended price. And apparently people paid even more than that because they loved it so much. So he was really, you know, you could see it meant a lot to him being there. And funny enough, so the two guys who showed up, Ed O'Brien, the guitar player, and Philip Selway, the drummer. And, you know, I was kind of curious what they were going to bring to their speeches because they're in Radiohead. But they were both totally moved by the honor. And I was kind of surprised to see that. And the other thing that really struck me about their speeches, other than the fact that they were really moved, was that the love that that band has for each other. And, you know, like, I don't really know too much about the inner workings of the band. I've never interviewed anybody from Radiohead, but Philip referred to them as his brothers, you know, and Ed similarly, you know, talked about just how proud he was of all they accomplished. And I think Phil said, you know, I still recognize the band that we started in school. It's been those same five guys for all these years. And I just didn't, especially them being British and being a total hipster band, I didn't expect the warmth and the love to come out of those two guys. And you could kind of see that they regret the others not showing up. But it still was a really surprisingly sweet moment that I really enjoyed. And, you know, I think some Radiohead fans were there, or just people who were there and love Radiohead. And I feel like the whole place was moved by that those moments.
That's great. I think, you know, quite often for maybe the casual music fan, or even, you know, or a more intense fan of a band, you typically hear, in the case of Radiohead, Tom York being interviewed or Johnny yeah. Greenwood being interviewed. So it's actually, that's kind of nice to hear from other bandmates and to like get a little inside into what their, like the machinations are, because yeah, I wouldn't imagine warm fuzzy happenings within that Radiohead band.
I mean, I'm telling you, when it's on HBO, I think it's April 27th. Like, watch it. You'll be surprised.
Awesome. Very cool. Yeah. I'm looking forward to that. Well, I know that you're a huge fan of The Cure, Brian, and they were inducted. You voted for them. You admitted that to us. what was that like? So they performed and they were inducted by Trent Reznor, right?
Yeah, Trent Reznor's speech was just unbelievable. And, you know, like I mentioned earlier, Trent has often talked about how he does not care about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and it doesn't mean anything to him. And, you know, Nine Inch Nails have been on the ballot and they haven't been voted in yet. I'm sure it's inevitable, you know, in the future. But you could see that he was there regardless of his feelings of the institution, because The Cure meant so much to him. And he talked about stuff that I think a lot of people who grew up listening to The Cure would identify with, which is like he lived out in the fields in Ohio. You know, there was nothing really to do other than sit in your room and dream. And that's his words. And, you know, listen to music and play music. And he cited The Head on the Door as the album that he got turned on to. And that when he heard that, he did not feel so alone anymore. And, you know, I feel like in this era that we're in now, like sort of way left field rock bands are so out of vogue and they don't seem to make a difference in this huge pop world anymore. But for somebody to say that they felt alone and then they heard a band and that they didn't is about, to me, as powerful as music gets. I have chills right now thinking about that speech, because for Trent to have done that, to have shown up, to have, you know, been at this event that he has always said he didn't care about, to talk about them and to talk about them with such passion was, you know, that was really, really moving as well. And, you know, when Robert Smith came on stage, Robert Smith and a lot of members of The Cure were part of this induction. As you guys know, like sometimes if a band has like tons of members throughout their history, like for instance, there's been 50 people in Santana over the years, but when Santana, the band, was inducted, it was only the original six guys. So the Hall of Fame's nominating committee decides who gets in, but The Cure have had so many great lineups. There was like seven or eight people behind him, including the first ever, as far as I know, transgender Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductee. Because I don't know if you knew this, but Pearl Thompson is now Pearl Thompson and has transitioned. Only Robert Smith spoke, and of the bands that were there or who were presented, in Def Leppard, only Joe Elliott spoke. In Roxy Music, only Brian Ferry spoke. And I think that was more of an HBO thing of like, mm-hmm. we're only going to put one guy on TV anyway, mm-hmm. and it's the singer. But anyway, Robert Smith, as you can, I mean, it was really weird to see him on stage outside of the context of playing in a band. You know, to like see Robert Smith walk up with no guitar and like have to talk. And like they got I'm not saying this because I'm a fan, they got the biggest applause of the night. People were going crazy and he just stood there, you know, gothy hair, eyeliner. And like he just sort of looked so uncomfortable, but also moved. And he said, you know, like, thank you so much for that, Trent. To hear that from an artist who I admire so much just means so much. And he said that he didn't really want to talk much, but then he actually did talk a lot. Like once it started coming, he had like a lot of things to say. And their performance was stellar. It was incredible. And it, you know, sort of what you would expect. They didn't only play hits. They opened with Shake Dog Shake, which is not what I would have, if you would have said, what five Cure songs are they probably going to play? That would not have been one. But they played Love Song. They played Pictures of You. Oh gosh, I'm forgetting what else they played. But Shake Dog Shake was a surprise to me. that was not what I was thinking they were going to come with. So it was awesome.
That's amazing. I love when a band does that. It's like, you know, when you know their catalog and they're like, guess what? This one's for the fans, right? Like, this is, yeah. You know, this one's for the fans.
And that one was. I mean, like, I don't think they're like, ooh, we hope they put Shake Dog Shake on the HBO, you know, broadcast. Like, I'm pretty sure they know that's not what they're going to use. But it was cool that they did it. And, like, the whole place was dancing. Even people who I think didn't think they liked The Cure didn't know The Cure songs. Like, everybody knows Pictures of You. Everybody knows Love Song. You know, they ended with Boys Don't Cry. I feel like, you know, it's maybe not
a video of that online.
It seemed like everybody knew it. So it was, I mean, God, I just felt so, you know, it's weird. Like, if a niche band gets in, like when Bruce Springsteen gets in, and I'm a huge Bruce Springsteen fan, but like, it's no surprise. You knew that was happening.
Of course.
You two, the minute they were eligible, was getting in. You knew REM was. So it's like, that's really cool. And I've been there for those and I've celebrated it. But like, when a niche band gets inducted, I feel like you feel seen. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, like, the thing that represented me is being recognized in a big mainstream thing. And that means a lot. Although I feel like that's the same for Janet Jackson, because she's not rock and roll and she's a woman of color who's underrepresented in everything. So I feel like Janet's fans also felt seen by this ceremony.
Definitely.
Well, one of the things that I loved last night, and this took me by surprise, I didn't know this was going to happen. I'm a huge Duran Duran fan, and I love the fact that Simon Le Bon and John Taylor, who have been eligible for years and have not been inducted, I'm not sure if they've been nominated, but they still showed up to honor someone else. So I kind of love that they that ego has been put aside and they showed up to honor or to induct
Roxy
Music.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, same deal with Trent Reznor. Although Trent has been on the ballot, Duran Duran has never even been on the ballot. But I think part of that is like politicking. Like, if you do stuff for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, I think their nominating committee is like, it sort of helps them to remember you're there. You know, so it's like, oh, those guys did that for us. Okay, cool. Yeah.
Right.
But I mean, politics aside, if someone asks them to honor Roxy Music, I think their response is where and when, you know, like, and you can see, that band really, really meant a lot to Duran Duran. And I was thinking about it in the car on the way home. Like, I don't know who else I would have, you know, if David Bowie were alive, Bowie would have been a good choice, but I don't think he could have come up with a better pick for that. Unless Nile Rodgers would have been a good one too. But there are a few others. Like, Duran Duran were perfect, and you listen to them telling their stories, and it's like they really were feeling it. Like, this really, really meant a lot to them. And you know, sort of by contrast, you know, you would say, well, of course, everybody is a fan of who they're inducting. But I think you might have been there the year too, Sean, that Steely Dan got in, and Moby did a speech. And like, Moby was really surprised. He's like, from what I understand about Steely Dan, they hate everybody. So I don't know why they called me for this. It turns out he was a fan anyway, and he made a great speech. But a couple of years ago, and you might remember this, the Steve Miller Band got in, the Black Keys did the speech, and like, they quoted Wikipedia in the speech. Like, if you're a fan of a band, you can't quote Wikipedia. And then something else happened. I forgot what happened. And Steve Miller in the press room went off on how the Black Keys suck, and like, they did a terrible speech, and he was pissed. And you know, for a guy running a website, like, that's gold, because then that back and forth goes back, you know, a couple of times. It's right about it. Not that I hope it happens, but like, that was kind of, you know, as far as beefs go, the Black Keys versus Steve Miller is pretty damn amusing. Like, generally speaking, most of the people who are doing these speeches are really, they pick the right people. They do a good job of that. And listening to Simon and John talk about discovering Roxy Music and what it meant to them and how it influenced them, they were perfect for it. And yeah, I mean, I think Duran Duran should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I hope they're on the ballot in the next few years. Like, I hope their appearance and their presence reminded the nominating committee, like, this was a pretty significant band too.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like certain 80s bands get taken less seriously just because it was the 80s and new wave or hair, you know, whatever. So, and it's the same thing with metal. Like, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, although the nominating committee and the voting body has changed, it still is very much what Rolling Stone magazine has smiled upon. And then there's a few exceptions, like, you know, Kiss, who they always hated, has gotten in, and Rush has gotten in. But generally, it's, you know, a lot of the artists are artists that Rolling Stone has tended to have supported over the years. And I don't think Duran Duran ever enjoyed that kind of support. So, but yeah, they totally deserve it. I'm on record saying it.
I like that. I like that. I'm going to remind you of that next year when you get to vote again.
Well, I mean, yeah, but I'm not on the nominating committee, so I can't.
Right.
Out. Got it. So, got
right.
It.
And, you know, and I don't like the problem is this year, every artist on the ballot, I forgot how many there were, but I kind of wanted them all to get in.
Yeah.
Like, it's really strong ballot. And even, you know, like the one that I sort of wasn't going to vote for, even though I love her, is Stevie Nicks, because I felt like, I don't know if her solo career really was that great, but then I'm like, yeah, but was Eric Clapton's really that great? And I felt like it was important, and you might know this, Stevie Nicks is the first woman to be inducted twice. There's been 22 men inducted more than, you know, twice.
Oh, wow.
You know, Michael Jackson is in with the Jacksons and himself. Curtis Mayfield is in with the Impressions as himself. Peter Gabriel is in with Genesis and himself. There's a lot. And then some people were just in, you know, like Jimmy Page was in the Yardbirds and Led Zeppelin. So there's a lot of men, but she's the first woman. And I think that was, you know, really, really important. And it was, you know, and it, you could see it meant a lot to her too.
That's great. And she was given the honor of opening the night, which is also really,
yeah,
cool. You know, I feel like for Amita and I, we are not being objective. We are saving maybe our favorite for last, Miss Janet Jackson. Inducted by Janelle Monáe, also, you know, our queen,
yes,
another queen of ours. So what was that like? So, like, were you able to see Janet Jackson fans from a mile away at the ceremony?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like there was a lot of Janet Jackson t-shirts. Obviously, her fans are, you know, from all races. But, you know, the people who were there sort of let it know they were there for Janet because they had, you know, those t-shirts. Janelle Monáe was perfect. Like, I was kind of, when I heard, you know, when we found out Janet was getting in, I was kind of hoping it would be Beyoncé. Mm-hmm. I feel like she would have brought it. And I feel like you could draw a line from Rhythm Nation to Beyoncé and Lemonade. Like the Beyonce's latest two albums, which really sort of just said, I don't give a F about radio. Like, I'm going to talk about what I'm going to talk about. But Janelle Monáe, who I feel like as big as she is, should be bigger. She was perfect. And her speech was also really, really moving. And, you know, frankly, in like a room that was, you know, at least three quarters white, if not more. I mean, she talked about specifically the impact of Janet on young Black girls. She's like, I saw a picture of this major star with Afro puffs and that, and like all of a sudden I saw a star who looked like me.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's, you know, I feel like, you know, as a, you know, straight white guy or whatever, I think like a lot of people like myself don't care to put themselves in other people's shoes and understand what that means, because you're seeing everybody in movies and on MTV and whatever who looks somewhat like you. But if you don't, if that wasn't the case, seeing someone who looked like you would mean a lot. And Janelle Monáe made that case. And, you know, like, that's not the only reason why Janet is getting in. She spoke about just the importance of her lyrics, the fact that she took control of her own career. You know, there was a lot of other things about it. But her, you know, again, you could see that Janet Jackson really meant a lot to Janelle Monáe. And she also pointed out that Janet Jackson has been her screensaver on her phone for the past 7 years. So she was like, sort of like, it was a very heavy sort of speech, and then when she went there, it was like, you know, cute, and it brought it down to like sort of a human level, because probably a lot of other people in there have had like Janet Jackson mouse pads or screensavers or,
of course,
you know, keychains or magnets or whatever, you know, depending on how old you are. So, but it was, I mean, it was a great moment, and really, you know, like I said, there was no drama to the night, but I got to say, everyone was so disappointed that she didn't perform. And to me, if she wasn't going to perform, what the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame should have done was had Janelle perform.
Oh my gosh, that would have been amazing.
It would have been amazing. I mean, some years there's a house band, because like if you have a lot of solo artists who don't have their own bands, they all just sing with like Paul Schaefer's band, or in more recent years with the Roots. This year they didn't do that because I think everybody was kind of self-contained. You know, the Cure don't need extra musicians. You know, Brian Ferry has his own band. But I just feel like Questlove was there. actually Janet had Questlove stand up, because Questlove is on the nominating committee and he has been campaigning for her ever since she's been eligible. Amazing. So he was there. The Roots could have been there. Yeah. And they could have done with Janelle, Miss You Much or Nasty, or there's so many different songs they could have done with her. I mean, I felt like Janelle or Janet could have gotten up with Def Leppard. If somebody said to Def Leppard, can you guys learn to play Black Cat? I'm sure they've been like, let's do it.
Definitely.
I know they would have done it. I mean, they did a CMT Crossroads with Taylor Swift. I'm sure they wouldn't mind doing a Janet Jackson song with either Janelle or Janet. Right. And that was, to me, the only disappointment of the night, that we didn't get to hear somebody perform a Janet song once. That was kind of a bummer. But it was great to see Janet there. And, you know, by the way, like, huge pop stars like that are sometimes, you know, a little bit jaded to, like, getting awards. Like, she's won a lot of awards over her career. She seemed moved. Like, she seemed, there was a few people that actually teared up. She seemed like one of them. Like, she seemed like she was going to get emotional. She did. Stevie seemed really emotional. And Rick Allen from Def Leppard, the guy who lost an arm, just because, you know, Joe Elliott was talking about his journey. He, at one point when Joe was talking about him, he visibly teared up. And those moments are great, obviously. And everybody, you know, I don't listen to that much Def Leppard, but how could you not, you know, get emotional listening to a guy who, a story of a guy who's a drummer who lost an arm and went on to still play the drums, you know?
Yeah.
So moments are really great. And I feel like they also really break down barriers between, you know, different people, like different genres.
For sure. For sure.
Yeah. I think that for Janet also, she's in this strange, strange place of, in some ways, being an underdog, right? She sold hundreds of millions of records and is a mega global pop star. But, you know, she's Michael and the Jackson 5's little sister. I think in a way, it's a constant quest for her to not have that stupid Super Bowl thing be in the first two paragraphs of her bio.
Yeah, and I mean, she didn't reference the Super Bowl, but she did reference, you know, she said a few things that I never heard her say. She said, I never wanted to be a singer. I was planning to go to college. I wanted to be a lawyer. I don't know if you've heard that before.
I've never heard that before.
I have never heard that.
But she said that her father convinced her to become a singer. And she said, you know, and she, you know, like, she looked at the incredible, extraordinary impact that her family had on popular culture. And, you know, she said, I was determined to stand on my own two feet outside of that while respecting what they've done. She didn't want to be like sort of the little sister, and she is the youngest of the family. So she really wanted to like do her own thing. And I think at that point, she had Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis also stand up. They were in the audience, resplendent in matching suits, of course.
Amazing.
And they stood up, and, you know, she said, like, this night is about you too. Because, you know, and there is the famous story that Joe Jackson said to them, don't make her sound like Prince. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I listened to her first two albums, which were before Control, and those albums sound like she was totally trying to be Prince. And that she wasn't working with them back then. So, but they came up with their own sound on that, especially on that first record, Control. I mean, wow, it was great. But, you know, like, she definitely made that point of wanting to stand out on her own.
Definitely. Definitely. What do you think the future of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is? Do you think there are any adjustments that need to be made? Is there any changes or any upgrades that they need to do in this world of streaming and the changing landscape of music? Or do they stick to the traditional ceremony and process to induct legendary musicians?
I think the ceremony is always going to be the ceremony. It's like saying, like, you know, the world is changing. Do there still need to be concerts? Like, at least right now, people like to go. I, you know, in some ways, I almost think like Instagram saved the concert industry, or didn't save it, but helped it. Because I feel like people love to like be at a thing and be like, look, I'm here. You know, I did that last night too. Like, I'm like, look, the Cure behind me. I have my Cure t-shirt on. Yay. You know, but people still like to go to these things. So I think the ceremony is always going to be what it is. I think HBO has some say in it, because clearly they don't do this for the money. There's nobody who's going to subscribe or not subscribe to HBO because of this one event. But I think they want a show that like looks good and, you know, is relevant to a younger audience. I mean, the one thing I think they need to do is still, I feel like they've tried hard to have a younger voting body. They, you know, I'm one of the newest voters. They reached out to me, but I just think they need to have more women voting. And actually, my headline was Janet Jackson to Rock Hall, induct more women in 2020. That was like the last thing she said at the speech. And, you know, I mean, I have to agree. I just feel like women have been underrepresented and that needs to change. So, you know, I mean, for me, there's a ton of women that I would have loved to vote for who are eligible. And this sort of is more of my personal taste. But to me, I always thought PJ Harvey was going to get into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame the first year she was eligible. Obviously, I was thinking that when alternative rock was at the center of the zeitgeist and like sort of an artist like her was on the cover of magazines, even without selling a lot of records. Mm-hmm. She's somebody who I would have voted for over everybody. I think you can make a great argument for Hole, even though their discography is kind of small. I feel like Courtney Love made a huge impact. Alanis Morissette is eligible now. And even though it's all about one album, really, Jagged Little Pill, I mean, there's a few afterwards. Like, I think there's a pretty strong argument for that one, too. I mean, the Sex Pistols only made one album. Therein, you could really trace a path from Alanis Morissette to a lot of singers who followed her mm-hmm. and who were influenced and inspired by what she did. So I would totally love, you know, on the other hand, I wouldn't want to see just like sort of perfunctory, like, oh, if a woman is popular, she should be in. Like, I don't think Mariah Carey should be in. I don't think Whitney should be in. And from an earlier generation, you know, like people sometimes bring up Barbara Streisand and Bette Midler, like great singers all, but I just don't feel like they have that sort of like edge that I would want to see somebody who gets into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame have. Although Bette and Barbara both have that edge on Twitter, but it's not in their music. Both great follows if you don't follow them.
Yeah, no, they're all
awesome. Definitely, they're definitely. Awesome.
If you don't like spelling, definitely follow Barbara Streisand. But for me, Bjork is like just such a monumental artist. I'm surprised she hasn't been on the ballot. But I was thinking about what other women could get in twice, because like you have to have done two different things that have made a really, really big impact. And, you know, not many people have. But to me, Carole King is actually in the Hall of Fame as a non-performer. She's in as one half of the songwriting team, Jerry Goffin and Carole King, who wrote a lot of songs for other people. But Carole King, as a recording artist, released Tapestry, which remains one of the best-selling records of all time. And I don't like any of her records nearly as much as that one, but like, that's a pretty big one. Like, I feel like if you did that one record, you don't need to do anything else. Like, mm-hmm. she should be in twice. I feel like there's a great argument for Diana Ross. She's in with the Supremes. Yeah. There's a precedent Donna Summer is in for a mostly disco, you know, filled career. I feel like there's no reason why Diana shouldn't be in as well. And then the other one, which is a little bit more of a dark horse, is Mavis Staples, because the Staples singers were inducted. I don't know if Mavis's solo career has made quite the impact, but I think there's a great argument for how great it was. If you've never heard her song, You Are Not Alone, it's one of the greatest songs I've ever heard in my life. So I'm hoping to see more women get in for the second time. But even more so, more women get in, you know, for the first time, because there does need to be more women, for sure.
I love all the predictions for all of the potential inductees, and I hope that some of the people that you just put into the universe get to that list in the upcoming years. Thank you so much again for all of the insight from last night's ceremony and for all of your musical knowledge, which we always love.
So, Brian, where can people read your work, and where can they find you on social media?
So on social media, I'm No Expiration on Twitter, I'm No Expiration on Instagram. And the thing about my work is that I syndicated to a lot of different sites. So I could like send something to you guys and have you guys tweet it out.
Perfect. And we'll also include links in our show notes as well.
Perfect.
Well, Brian, thanks again. Always a pleasure and honor to have you on our show.
And for those of you who want to watch the ceremony that Brian just so eloquently discussed, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame ceremony will air on HBO on Saturday, April 27th at 8 p.m.
So much more ahead for you guys. We have The Big Sell coming up after two short messages from fellow podcasts on Maximum Fun.
Hey, everybody, this is J. Keith Van Stratton, host of Go Fact Yourself, a live game show here in the Maximum Fun Network. Make sure to listen to our next episode of Go Fact Yourself with guest Kurt Brownowler.
I did a show in Flagstaff, Arizona, where the venue just didn't list that the show existed.
Amazing.
And it is the smallest crowd that I've ever done a full hour of stand-up for. It was three people.
Oh, wow. My God.
And Sarah Schaefer.
Yes, I love crafting. It's my hobby. I have a craft nook in my home.
You do?
I do. It has all my supplies displayed in an adorable manner.
Wow.
Yes. Yes, applause.
Applause for a nook.
That's Go Fact Yourself here at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get podcasts.
Have you ever watched a movie so bad you just needed to talk to somebody about it?
Well, here at the Flophouse, we watch a bad movie and then talk about it.
Yeah, you don't have to do anything. We'll watch it and we'll talk it. We do the hard work.
Featuring the beautiful vocal talents of Dan McCoy,
Stuart Wellington,
and me, America's Rascal, Elliot Kalin.
New episodes every other Saturday at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts, dude. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Welcome back to Inside Pop.
It is now time for The Big Sell, the segment in which Amita and I take turns recommending something from the world of pop culture and sharing it with the other. Last week, I celebrated the fact that I was late to the party with a great new artist named Tierra Whack. Whack World was the phenomenal album she released last year. Every song on the album was under a minute long. And she's released some new songs that are actually over a minute long, and I recommended three of those to Amita. Amita, what did you think of the long-winded Tierra Whack?
She is so long-winded. What is going on? You know, I really enjoyed it. I love Tierra Whack's ability to, like, manipulate her voice and completely just switch the tone and the style of what she does, because each of these songs had different feelings to them and different, like, one of them I was like, is that her? You know, she sounded a little bit more like, had a more masculine sound than her feminine sound. And so I really enjoyed these three tracks. I enjoyed that they were longer than a minute. She can do that. Thank God. That's great. So some versatility as an artist. It's just so funny to say, like, you could do a long song. Great. I think Only Child was probably the standout for me on that. I felt like some interesting Childish Gambino vibes from that track. And I really enjoyed all three of these long play songs.
So I'm assuming that these are all songs that will appear on an upcoming album. I think she's actually even released one or two more since we recorded our last episode. So I feel like, yes, an album is on its way. So are, yeah, you down to listen to this new album? Are you excited to hear the new album based on these songs?
Oh, yes, definitely. Cool. Definitely. I was already excited from Whack World. Like, just somebody experimenting, trying different things. And when her different thing was just doing something that was shorter and, like, you know, extended the entire album to feel like one cohesive thing. And I feel like people like that who take chances, I always want to try to support and you know, lift up and hopefully see what they have to do next. So I'm really excited.
Well, let's see how much you're willing to uplift her. What is your rating for these new Tierra Whack songs?
I think my rating for this is 3.25 stars. Yes.
That's supportive.
It is. I am.
You are supporting your...
I am quite supportive.
Ms. Whack, that is awesome. So what do you have to big sell to me this week?
I loved Queer Eye. You all know this. I also love The Good Place. You all know this also. So I am really excited to share this conversation between two of the stars of both of those shows, who are actors and hosts of color. And it is really amazing to hear Tan France from Queer Eye and Manny Jacinto from The Good Place discuss being someone of color, putting themselves in the public eye. And what I thought was really interesting is that Tan France admitted he didn't have any desire to be involved with Queer Eye. And because of the change in the Hollywood landscape and the need for representation and inclusion on camera. And when it comes from somebody who's South Asian, like me, who Tan France is Pakistani, and like him, he was just like, it. He can be that person that he doesn't see in media. And this conversation was just really wonderful and eye-opening to listen to two really hot prospects right now in Hollywood who are really making an impact and representing their backgrounds and their culture in the shows that they do.
Interesting. And it sounds like an interesting pairing because they're not of the same ethnic backgrounds, right? So two different types of people of color who are on air. And where did you find this? Where does this exist?
I found this through an article that posted this this conversation. It's called A Core Conversation. And it's just a one-on-one between the two of them. There's no host. It's just the two of them having a really open and honest conversation. And I wanted to share that with you.
That sounds really interesting. I know The Good Place is supposed to be one of the great comedies on TV right now. I haven't had a chance to watch more than a couple of episodes. When I watch it, I really love it. So I don't really know the work of either of these all that well, but I'm definitely interested in the topic and definitely interested in checking it out. So thank you so much for that big sell.
Yeah, I really highly recommend you try to get into The Good Place. It's such a smart, irreverent show and has this intellect in it along with this fun comedy piece because they talk about philosophy and morals. And so I think it's brilliant. And I think what really is great about Manny Jacinto, and he says this in an interview as well, is that he is trying to like debunk stereotypes about Asians in the media and in Hollywood because it's always like we are – you know, nerds and we get all A's and we're good at math. And like his character is the opposite, you know, and he says, I don't want to play into stereotypes. He said he'll never play a terrorist or a taxi driver. And I think that's really important for somebody like him on a hit show to say out loud and to put into the universe. So yes, yes to all of it.
Yes to all of it. All right. Definitely looking forward to checking that out. We'll have the link to that big sell in our show notes, but of course, until then, thank you everyone for listening to another episode of Inside Pop. Please stay in touch with us on Twitter and Instagram at Pop Insiders. You can like us on Facebook and also visit our official site at InsidePopPodcast.com. While you're there, click on that subscribe button and you'll never miss an episode.
You can also find us on MaximumFun.org. It is a wonderful podcast network that is artist-owned and listener-supported. And speaking of that listener support, we have to thank everyone who joined and supported us during the Max Fun Drive these last couple weeks. We are so grateful for those who took the time to become a member, upgrade their membership, renew their membership, and hopefully click on Inside Pop to donate to our little podcast. So we appreciate you all, and thank you very much.
All right, coming up in the next episode, it has been such a long, arduous, anticipatory wait, but the moment has arrived. Game of Thrones, the final season, is back, and we will have a recap of the first episode, sharing our thoughts and feelings. We will specifically talk about the situation of the direwolves. That's what I care most about in the show. Perhaps the Game of Thrones theme song that I like to sing to people. Maybe there will be additional lyrics added to that song in honor of the premiere.
Don't get me too excited. Okay, I'm already excited for the premiere. I can't even deal with it. And now you're going to tell me that there's a new song. Stop it. Swords, Dragon and Swords.
Yeah, more lyrics. More lyrics.
Oh my gosh.
So that is ahead for you in our next episode. We can't wait to bring that to you because that means that we will have seen the first episode of Game of Thrones and our lives will be that much more complete.
Yes. Well, thank you all for listening. Have a great week.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.